radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Well, thank you, Dave, and again, welcome to Yesteryear, the best of the golden age of radio. On today's program, we'll present one of the all-time favorites of the macabre, Lights Out. But first, it's the Jack Benny program. Jack Benny spanned some 23 years with great success on radio all the way. In 1932, Benny was a top stage headliner when columnist Ed Sullivan asked him to appear on a CBS interview program. The rest, as they say, is radio history. Benny's program, premiering on NBC Blue in May of 1932, was a solid hit. He later shifted to a Thursday night slot on CBS, and in 1933, his program was picked up by Chevrolet for a 10 p.m. Sunday night NBC run. In 1934, sponsorship went to Jell-O. In 1949, CBS scored the greatest coup in broadcasting, luring Benny away from NBC and back to CBS in a deal involving some $2 million. On CBS, Benny continued in his 7 p.m. Sunday format until May of 1955, his last broadcast on radio. Here now, from October of 1939, is the Jack Benny program with Stanley and Livingston from Yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent. Then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Bert and Marge, Amos and
the Jell-O program, starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. And now, ladies and gentlemen, for the third time this season, we bring you our master of ceremonies, a man who smokes a cigar so short that it finally becomes an inlay, Jack Benny.
Thank you. Hello again, this is Jack Benny talking, and Don, that introduction was so cute, and you're so big that I just can't be mad at you. It was very clever, Don, although a bit exaggerated.
Well, Jack, you do smoke your cigars pretty short.
I know, Don, but there's a reason for that. It just so happens that the cigars I smoke are very hard to get. They're made especially for me by a man in Tampa, Florida, a fellow called Perfecto Ginsburg. Oh, it's an excellent smoke.
Are your cigars very expensive, Jackson?
Well, they are, Phil. If you buy them individually, of course, you can order them by the box or by the gross and save money.
How do you get them?
Jack buys them by the yard and cuts them off.
Now, Mary, that's not only silly, but unbelievable.
Go on. You even send your old matches back to Sweden to be re-dipped.
Mary, the only matches I ever sent back to Sweden were those that didn't work. Jeepers, nobody could be as tight as you make me out to be.
Oh, no? Tell them what you did last week to little Dennis Day, our new singer.
Mary, we got a long play to do tonight. And now, folks.
Come on, Mary, what happened?
And now, folks.
What about Dennis?
Jack paid him his salary in silver dollars and then taught him how to stand on his head.
Now, Mary Livingston, you're just making that up. In the first place, I don't pay Dennis his salary. I give it to his mother, who in turn gives it to Dennis.
Who in turn stands on his head.
Oh, that's top of them, Mary.
Phil, when we need a scorekeeper here, I'll let you know. Meanwhile, make like a mummy. And now, ladies and gentlemen, as you may remember, last week we announced that tonight, the Benny Livestock Company, I mean the Benny Livestock Company, would present their version of Daryl F. Zanuck's production, Stanley and Livingston. Now, in our version, I will play the part of Mr. Stanley, the newspaper man, as portrayed on the screen by that sterling and inimitable actor, Spencer Tracy.
Inimitable?
Yes.
What are you talking about? That guy's a great actor.
Phil, that was a compliment. Inimitable means that Spencer Tracy cannot be imitated or duplicated.
Not tonight, anyway.
We'll see about that. Now, Mary, you're going to be my secretary, and Phil, for some unknown reason, you're going to be the editor of the newspaper. You know, my boss.
Your boss, eh?
Yes.
Benny, you're fired.
Wait for the play. And Don, you're going to be a cannibal.
Cannibal? Why, Jack, you promised me that I could be the editor. Gee, I have the headlines all set and everything.
Yes, Don, I can just see the big red letters on your headline. Rain tomorrow, so go to your neighborhood grocer for Jell-O today. We'll take care of that for you, Don. Now, Dennis Day.
Wait a minute, Jack. Dennis isn't here yet.
He isn't? What's the matter with that kid, anyway? I told his mother last week that he must be here on time.
You know, Jack, I don't think Mrs. Day likes you very much.
Oh, she doesn't. Huh. I should worry and get a wrinkle.
Just worry about the ones you got.
What was that? What'd you say?
I said, just worry about the ones you got.
Oh, my wrinkle. Never mind. I'll find out what's keeping that kid. Mary, get Mrs. Day on the telephone. It's Hollywood, 2734. I'll tell her a thing or two, believe me.
Operator, get me Hollywood, 2734.
She's been getting away with murder, and I'm not going to put up with her temperament any longer.
What do you got to do, get off the program?
Phil, you better keep still. I'm mad at you clear through Christmas already. And another thing.
Hello? Who is this? Oh, Jack, it's Gladys.
Hang up. I gave you the wrong number. Mrs. Day is Oxford 7071.
Oh. Operator, get me Oxford 7071.
Gee, I got a little mixed up there.
Gladys, eh? Say, Jack, is that the tomato I saw you with on Vine Street the other night?
Phil, she's going to have her teeth fixed, so no cracks. A darn nice kid.
Hello? Just a minute, Mrs. Day. Here's your call, Jack.
Okay. Hello, Mrs. Day. This is Jack Benny. Now, Mrs. Day, what about Dennis? We've been on the air 15 minutes and he's not here yet. What? He's been a bad boy and he can't come to the program. But this is his job. I don't care if he won't eat his carrot. There must be other ways to punish him. But I know, Mrs. Day. I know, Mrs. Day. I know, Mrs. Day.
Look, he knows Mrs. Day.
Mary. Now, will you please make an effort to get Dennis over here immediately? Thank you. Goodbye. Oh, just a minute, Mrs. Day, while we're on the subject. I've had just about enough of your meddling. I'm running this program. If you don't like it, you can stay away.
All right, Jack. Take your finger off the hook.
Mary, I was just rehearsing what I'm going to say when she comes in. Everybody settle down. Come on, Phil, let's have a good number.
How about Hollywood 2734?
You know what I meant, Phil. So hit it.
Okay, Jackson.
Having Any Fun from George Wythe Scandal, played by Phil Harris and his orchestra. And now, ladies and gentlemen...
Oh, pardon me, Jack. I just found this gold cigarette case under the piano. Does it belong to you, Phil?
No, I don't carry one.
Let's see that, Don.
I thought it might have dropped out of your pocket, Phil, while you were leading the band.
No, no, it isn't mine.
Let's see that, Don.
Is this your cigarette case, Mary?
No, I don't smoke.
Let's see that, Don.
I'm sure it doesn't belong to any of the boys in the band.
Of course not. Let's see that, Don.
I know it isn't mine.
Let me see that, Don, for goodness sake. Now, give me that cigarette case, and I'll hold it until the rightful owner claims it.
But, Jack, I found it. I better hold it.
Don, I'm responsible for anything that's found in this studio. So hand it over.
Okay, Jack, here you are.
Thanks. And now, folks... Gee, it's beautiful, isn't it? Gold, all right. And now, folks, getting back to our play, Stanley and Livingston, Mark Litton, too. Lovely. We have attempted something in a more legitimate vein. Now, in our version... As I said before, I'm going to play the part of...
Come along, Dennis, and stop soaking.
Here she is, folks. Tugboat Annie. Well, good evening, Mrs. Day. I'm so glad you were able to get here. Really, it's very sweet of you.
I'll have no sarcasm, young man. I had a perfectly good reason for keeping Dennis at home. He was a bad boy.
But, Mother, I don't like carrots.
I don't blame you.
Dennis, if you ever expect to be a great singer, you must eat your vegetables.
Mrs. Day, for your information, Bing Crosby never ate a carrot in his life. And he's doing all right.
Well, Crosby feeds carrots to his horses.
Yes, and look at him. What they need is raw meat. Now, let's forget about carrots. Oh, Dennis.
Yes, please?
Right after your song, we're going to do our play. And since you don't like vegetables, you're going to be a cannibal.
Dennis is not going to be a cannibal.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Day, but that's what he'll have to be. He's had no acting experience. What else can he do?
I can stand on my head.
Wait till Saturday. Anyway, Dennis, it's all settled.
Oh, no, it isn't. He must have a more dignified part.
Oh, I suppose you'd like to have him play the lead. I suppose he can do a better job than I can.
He's wide open, Mrs. Day. Give it to him.
Mary, she doesn't need any help from you. The old tag.
What was that?
I said, let's play tag. I feel young. Do you mind? Now, let's have no more interruptions, please. Go ahead with your song, Dennis.
Yes, Mr. Benny.
Now, hold it a minute. Come in.
Will you pardon the interruption, Mr. Benny, but I was rehearsing in this studio today, and I believe I left my cigarette case here. Did you happen to see it?
Why, yes, a cigarette case was found. As a matter of fact, I have it in my pocket.
Well, thanks. I'll just take it and run along.
Oh, I'm sorry, but you'll have to identify it, Mr.
Kaiser's the name. K. Kaiser.
Oh, K. Kaiser!
Evening, Paul. Hi-yo.
Well, I didn't recognize you when you came in.
Say, who is this guy anyway? Got a big hand.
Phil, this is Kay Kaiser, the orchestra leader.
Oh, you working around here, bub?
Phil, for heaven's sake, Kay Kaiser has his own radio program. And one of the greatest and most popular bands in the country.
Well, thanks, Mr. Dennis. Thanks very much.
Oh, so you're in my racket, eh, Kaiser? Let me ask you something. How many pianos you got in your band?
One.
Well, take a look over there. I got two pianos.
I got one good one.
That's very good, huh? Well, Kay, I'm really glad you dropped in to see me.
I didn't drop in to see you. I just came back from a cigarette case.
Oh. Well, as long as you're here, we might as well do a routine about it.
That's Jack, all right. Free talent, Benny.
Mary, I'm just trying to be a good host, that's all. Well, Kay, what are you doing out here in Hollywood? You generally broadcast from New York.
Yes, but I came out here to make a picture for RKO called That's Right, You're Wrong.
Oh, is that so? That's a swell title. You know, I made two pictures last year.
He's making one good one.
Mary, please. Well, Kay, how much longer are you going to stay in California?
Well, we only have one more week out here, so I'd better take my cigarette case now.
Oh. Well, look, Kay, I'll be glad to return the case to you, but I've got to be certain it's yours. Can you identify it?
Why, certainly. There's a monogram on it. It says KK. What more do you want?
Now, wait a minute. KK could stand for a lot of things. Kris Kringle or Crazy Cat. Why, it could even stand for Phil Harris.
Oh, you mean Colonel Corn?
That's it. That's it, exactly. Okay, I'm afraid you'll have to identify the case a little better than that.
Well, I don't know if I can. I just got it yesterday for a present.
Well, maybe I can help you. Can you stand a quiz?
Why, sure, sir. Shoot the sizzling, sibling sticklers, and I'll endeavor to circumvent the seriousness of the situation I'm in.
Oh. Well, that took up 2 minutes, right? Well, all right, Kay, let's go. Now, our first question comes from Mr. Jack Benny of Beverly Hills, California. Mr. Benny would like to know what metal your cigarette case is made of.
Well, it's...
Now, listen, Kay, here's a clue. When the blue of the night meets the what of the day, da-dum, da-dum, dee.
Gosh, that's beautiful.
Phil, keep out of this. Have you got it, Kay?
Well, would you give it to me just once more?
Yeah, look. When the blue of the night meets the g-g-g-g-g of the day.
Yeah, yeah.
G-g-g-g.
Yeah,
come
yeah,
on,
yeah.
Kay. Good, 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 good.
Yeah, yeah.
Student!
Silver!
That's wrong. It's gold. Now, Kay, I'll give you another chance. What's inside the case?
Cigarettes.
Correct. And what kind of cigarettes are they?
Now, let's see. I should know cigarettes.
Well, Kay, here's a clue. You are my la-la.
Uh-huh.
You are my what star.
Lucky!
Lucky what?
Lucky Strike, and thanks for the plug!
That's well, Kay, and here you are. You win. Here are your cigarettes.
Well, what about the case?
You don't get that. You missed the word gold. You didn't say gold.
Well, I tried to, but you had your hand over my mouth.
Oh. And now, ladies and gentlemen, Dennis Day will sing...
Jack! I'm not leaving here till I get my cigarette, Kay.
You'll have to see me later, Kay. Pull up a chair and watch our show. What are you going to sing, Dennis?
I'm going to sing...
Dennis is going to sing South of the Border. And if you don't mind, I'd like to have Mr. Kaiser conduct the orchestra.
I'll be glad to.
Fine.
If he picks up that stick, I'll phone the union.
Oh, Phil, don't be such a baby. Sing, Dennis.
South of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when stars above came out to play. And now as I wander, my heart's ever strays. South of the border, down Mexico way. Was a peaches in old Spanish lace. Just for a tender while I kissed a smile upon her face. For it was fiesta and we were so gay. South of the border, down Mexico way. Then she smiled as she whispered, "Mañana," never dreaming that we were parting. And I lied as I whispered, "Mañana," for our tomorrow never came. South of the border, I rode back one day. There in a veil of white, by candlelight, she knelt to pray. The mission bells told me that I must stay.
was Dennis Day singing South of the Border, and very good, Dennis.
Thank you.
Now, we're going to do our play now, so take your clothes off and put this ring in your nose.
Okay.
Mr. Benny, I told you Dennis is not going to be a cannibal.
All right, then I'll make him my native guide. That's a cannibal who went to college. Are you satisfied? And now, ladies and gentlemen, for our feature attraction, Stanley and Livingston. The opening scene is the editorial office of the New York Herald, where we find Jack Stanley, star reporter, and his secretary, Miss Mary LaTouche.
LaTouche, I quit.
Mary, we don't want to confuse your name with Dr. Livingston.
Come on, let's start the show. I want to get on you, Benny.
Well, just because you're my boss in the play, don't let it throw you. We now take you to the office of the New York Herald. Curtain. Music.
Hello, New York Herald. Miss LaTouche speaking. I hate that name.
Mary.
What's that? Yes? 9:30? All right, I'll tell him.
Who was that?
Gladys.
Oh.
She wants you to bring some White Rock.
Okay. Now, don't bother me for the next half hour, Miss LaTouche. I'm writing a story about Dr. Livingston.
Is that the explorer that's lost in Africa?
Yes, and the boss wants me to go look for him. He thinks it'll be a great scoop for the paper.
Here comes the boss now.
Where is he? Where is that star reporter? Let me at him.
Look at him. Hello, Chief.
Oh, there you are. Now, see here, Stanley. I've been looking over that story you turned in yesterday, and it's the worst lot of junk I ever heard.
Well, I thought it was pretty good, Chief.
Good? Why, that stuff was turbulent, stagnant, abominable.
You're showing off now. Last week, you didn't even know what that meant.
Never mind the wisecracks. You either go out and get some hot news or resignate.
Resignate?
I knew he'd slip.
Well, look, Chief, I'm trying to get all the news I can.
Well, you can't sit here and wait for it. You gotta go out and dig, dig, dig. Chop, chop, chop.
Well, all right. I'm doing my best, Chief.
And another thing, Stanley, I gave you an assignment 2 weeks ago. I told you to go to Africa and find Dr. Livingston.
Well, I'm waiting for my laundry to come back.
He sends it to Waukegan.
I do not.
Now, listen, Stanley, you better find Livingston or you're fired. You hear? Fired.
Okay, Chief. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Oh, boy, was that fun.
The last time I'll work for him as long as he works for me. Well, so long, Miss LaTouche. It looks like I got to go to Africa. I'm off to the jungle.
Wait a minute. I'm going with you.
Oh, what could you do there?
You need a straight man, don't you?
That's right. Well, come along, gal. We might as well leave right now. We'll find Dr. Livingston, or my name ain't Jack Stanley.
Six months later, the Stanley expedition has reached Africa and have started their long trek into the jungle. As we pick them up, we find Mr. Stanley with his native guide, Zombie.
That's you, Dennis.
Who is accompanied by his mother.
Oh, fine. Go ahead, Don.
Africa! The jungle!
She is hot. 4 months trekking through the jungle and still no trace of Dr. Livingston. Miss LaTouche, what do you got your finger up in the air for?
I'm trekking, too.
Now, stick close to me. We're in constant danger.
I wonder where we are.
Wait. I'll ask my native guide. Hey, Zombie.
Yes, please?
How far are we from Tanganyika?
Me think got him walk 6 more miles.
Dennis, what's your language?
Mrs. Day, he's a native. He's supposed to talk like that.
Oh.
Lead the way, Zombie. Just about enough of this jungle. Nothing but swamps and wild animals and those awful tsetse flies. I wish they'd stay off my glasses. Oh, well. It won't be long now.
Oh, Jack. Jack, watch out.
What's the matter?
Look what's in front of you. Look.
Good heavens. Look out, Mrs. Day. There's a boa constrictor right in front of you.
Well, let it get out of my way.
Don't think it won't.
Let's all be careful and stick close together. We gotta watch out for cannibals. Come on, Zombie. Lead the way.
6 hours later, our little group of explorers is approaching the village of Tanganyika. It's a wild and desolate country. Will they find Dr. Livingston? We shall see.
Hey, Zombie. Are we near Tanganyika?
Yes, Master. Plenty soon.
Good. This may be the moment we've been waiting for.
Oh, Jack, look. Look at that sign on the tree.
Where?
Right there. It says Wilshire Bowl, 9,000 miles.
I must make a note of that. The boss will give me a raise. Hey, wait a minute. See that hut over there in the clearing?
Look, master. White man. White man.
You're right, zombie.
Where are you going, Jack?
I'm going over and talk to him. That might be Livingston. Pardon me, sir. Are you Dr. Livingston?
No, I'm young Dr. Kildare.
Dr. Kildare, what are you doing in Tanganyika?
We're having a sneak preview of my latest picture.
Oh, have they got a theater here in the jungle?
Yes, there it is.
Oh, yes.
Well, I'll be darned. Jack, look who's coming next week.
What?
Man About Town, starring Rochester.
Oh, well, I got a fine chance here. Oh, well. So long, Doctor.
So long.
Lead the way, zombie. We must find Livingston.
3 weeks later, the Stanley expedition, tired and weary, have now reached the little village of Zambezi. Will they find Dr. Livingston? No.
Well, there's no use stopping here. Come on, kid. We must find Livingston.
2 years later, and our brave little band of explorers, after many hardships and privations, have now reached the little village of Tanganyika.
Tanganyika? We were here 2 years ago. What's the matter with you, zombie?
Don't blame Dennis.
Well, he's our guide, isn't he?
Dennis is doing the best he can.
Mrs. Day, my nerves are shattered. I'm at my rope's end. We're out in the jungle. Take it easy. Well, I'm afraid we'll have to give up. Our expedition is a failure. Listen, you hear that? What is that, zombie?
Ujiji tribe, very bad cannibals.
Cannibals?
Don't worry, Mr. Tush. I'll talk to these Ujijis in their native tongue. Here they come now. See, they look fierce.
Yeah, look at their leader. Are those teeth?
It ain't a grand piano. All of you stay here. I'll go ahead and talk to them. I'll stop this. Kuba Sun! Hoka!
Hoka!
Me, Hoka Kua Rani Kili, Hoka Dr. Livingston.
Guba, all me no jello. Straba, Raspa, Chara, Orange, Lemon, and Lime. Kuka!
Now look, Chief.
Master him no, Chief. This man, Chief.
Oh, well, I'll talk to him. Hey, Chief. Me, Hoka Kua Rani Kila, Hoka Dr. Livingston.
No, Hoka Kua Rani!
He's pretty mad. Lucky I bought some trinkets with me. Here, Chief. Here's a string of beads for you.
Guba beads? Me puka bamba hoka cigarette case.
Cigarette case? Gazook to K. Kaiser. Let me out of here.
Oh, no, you don't. Do that.
Go on, Professor.
Yes, grab him.
All right. Call him off. Here's your cigarette case. I wasn't going to keep it anyway.
Thanks, Jack. So long, everybody.
With all the cannibals in Africa, I had to meet him. Thank you. We're a little late, so good night, folks.
Hey, keep help, help. Oh.
From October 22nd of 1939, it's been Stanley and Livingston on the Jack Benny program. In a moment, we'll invite you to turn your lights out as we prepare for the macabre. It's Arch Obler's Lights Out as Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Lights Out, radio's ultimate horror show, was first heard locally on Chicago station WENR as a late-night program in 1934. The show was created by Willis Cooper, then a staffer at NBC's Chicago studios. Tucked away in an after-midnight slot in its early days, the show offered imaginative plays so filled with sinister, throat-clutching sound effects that it created a sensation. Upon Cooper's departure for the West Coast in 1936, NBC brought in Arch Obler, a young playwright who had done some work for Rudy Valley. Lights Out really became Obler's show. From his first program in May of 1936, Obler approached each new script as a challenge. After 2 years of constantly trying to top himself, Obler quit and began his famous plays series. Lights Out continued for a year after Obler's departure, the show continuing until August of 1939. Obler returned to CBS in October of 1942, where he resurrected Lights Out from New York as a 30-minute Tuesday night CBS entry for Ionized Yeast. That ran until September of 1943. The final series came to Mutual in July of 1947. Lights Out went into television in 1949, continuing until 1952. But the TV version never really achieved the popularity of the radio show. For those lurkers of the crypt whose inner ears still go thump, thump, thump to the faint, faraway echo of Lights Out. Everybody.
It is later than you think. Lights Out brings you stories of the supernatural and the supernormal, dramatizing the fantasies and the mysteries of the unknown. We tell you this frankly. So if you wish to avoid the excitement and tension of these imaginative plays, we urge you calmly but sincerely to turn off your radio now.
This is Arch Obler. Tonight's Lights Out presents a psychological drama, a play in which the principal part is taken not by the character himself, but by his thoughts.
And now, Lights Out. Everybody.
The voice you are about to hear is that of the thoughts of one Darrell Hall, accused murderer. He sits in a courtroom awaiting the return of a jury which is to decide whether he is to live or die. And as he waits, the thoughts in his mind seethe and swirl.
Guilty. Not guilty. Guilty. Not guilty. Oh, why don't I stop thinking those words? Words those jurymen are saying.
He's guilty. He's not guilty. He's guilty. Not guilty.
No.
Guilty.
No, I've got to stop thinking of what's going on in that room. The jurymen, I've got to stop thinking of them. I've got to keep my head clear. I've got to figure things out. When did all this start? Yes, I remember. That night, Wayne and I were sitting in my room talking about dreams. I remember he said...
Oh, come on, Darrell. Don't expect me to believe that one.
I'm certainly telling you the truth.
A fellow with your imagination wasting his time teaching biology to a bunch of co-ed nitwits? No, sir. You should be writing fiction.
Well, I assure you, my dear Wayne, I've told you the truth.
Here. Are you really serious?
I am.
You actually mean that in all your life you've never had a dream?
Never.
Not even when you were a child?
To my knowledge, I've never had a dream in all my life.
Well, how do you like that?
I like it very well. I close my eyes, oblivion. And then I wake up. No nightmare hangovers, thank you.
Now, wait a minute, Darrell. Let me get this straight. You mean you've never even had a dream after, you know, eating a Welsh rarebit at midnight or surrounding a dozen green apples or anything like that?
Believe me, Wayne, I've never had a dream of any shape, form, or description in all my life. A dream to me is just a word. Something that happens to other people, but never to me.
Oh, but everyone must dream.
Well, just so happens that my subconscious doesn't work that way. I tell you again, I've never dreamt.
Oh, what do you know about that? It's just unbelievable. I tell you, unbelievable.
Yes, that's what he said. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable that I'd never dreamt. And then after a while, he went away and left me there. It was early evening, but I remember that somehow, strangely, I was very tired. I sat down in the easy chair. I was so tired. I closed my eyes. I slept. And then it happened. A strange murmuring in my head. Yes, that's how it started. A murmuring as if in warning. And then in the darkness around me, strange faces lifting and falling. White faces, faces without hope. Their eyes full of horror, their white bloodless lips pleading wordlessly in a way that made the heart in me cry out in pity. And suddenly I knew I was asleep and dreaming.
Yes, dreaming for the first time in my life, and these faces I was seeing were things of a dream.
And even as I knew that, the dream was gone. Blackness. And yet I knew that I was still asleep, and in me there was a terrible feeling of foreboding, of a horror to come in that dream. What? How? I didn't know, but I wanted to stop sleeping. I wanted to open my eyes quickly before... Then I saw her. In my dream, I tell you, I saw her moving slowly toward me out of the darkness that was my dream. At first, a white wraith-like thing, and then I saw it was a woman. Yes, the body of a woman, but the face... That face... Gross. Unclean. The thick bestial brows. The wrinkles of... The lecherous writhings of thin crimson lips that lifted from teeth bright and pointed and flecked with blood. Closer, closer to me, and then she spoke. One word.
Kill.
Yes, that's what she said, kill. And as she said it, she moved closer. Her hands went out in her eyes. And in my dream, I screamed... I remember just at that second the clock on the mantel began striking. 5, 6, 7. I counted each chime in happiness, since the hearing of it meant that I was awake, awake out of the horror of that dream. When the clock had stopped chiming, I sat there. My one thought was, if that's dreaming, may I never dream again. I heard a sound. What was that? I sat still, afraid to move. And then I laughed. It was my own heart. My own heart still pounding with fright at what I had seen in my first dream. Oh, why do I sit here thinking of what has been? The jury in there, they've got to hang me. Got to hang me.
He's guilty, not guilty.
No,
guilty,
no, guilty, no, I mustn't guilty, think of them. Better guilty, to keep my guilty. Thoughts on how it all started. Better to figure things out. Where was I? Yes. Sitting there, listening to the beat of my heart, thinking of the horror of that dream. And then suddenly that wordless, pitiful murmur I heard in my dream was whispering in my head again. As quickly as it began, it was gone. How could this be? I was awake, awake. This was no dream. Then why had I heard that same sound that had come from those pitiful white faces that had floated before me while I slept? Why? Why? I heard it, a sound behind me. Who? Yes, my friend Wayne, it must be. He come into the room, standing behind my chair, thinking I was asleep. I turned around and I said, Wayne, is that you? Why, ah! Yes. I screamed. I screamed so loudly there was blood in my throat. For it was she again, that woman. That woman out of my dream. But this wasn't a dream. She was standing there, I tell you, she was standing there close to me, looking at me, and those devil's lips said that one word.
Kill.
I jumped to my feet. No one in the room, no one, I tell you, I remember standing there, my head reeling. Who was she? Where had she come from? But there was no one in the room. Had there been anyone there? I didn't sleep that night. And by morning... Yes, by morning I had it all figured out. Two dreams, that's what it had been. And the second had been more vivid than the first. Yes, of course, I had never dreamed before, and of course my first dream would seem reality. And yet, some measure of uncertainty remained with me. Mary saw it in my face when I had dinner with her that night. I remember she said...
Do you mind if I ask you something?
What a question. Of course not.
Is there something wrong?
You mean with a dinner? Why, you know this is my favorite restaurant.
With you, dear. Has something gone wrong at the university?
Why do you ask that?
The worry in your eyes.
Oh?
What is it, dear?
Oh, nothing important.
Changed your mind about loving me?
Mary.
Oh, then tell me what it is, please.
All right. It's really nothing to concern yourself over, just a dream.
Dream? Daryl, you dreamt?
Yes, last night.
Oh, how marvelous. Now you're normal even when you sleep.
That's right, isn't it? I'm back to normalcy, am I not?
Oh, and here I thought from the expression on your face that it was something really important.
Yes, funny, isn't it?
And I suppose in your first dream you dreamt of a glorious, seductive woman. Well, didn't you?
No, Mary.
Oh, so you had a nightmare.
If you don't mind, let's not talk about it anymore. Shall we have our dessert now? I suggest the hot green apple pie with cheese and...
Daryl, was it as bad as all that?
Horrible.
Oh, that's cruel. Your very first dream, an unhappy one. Oh, well, I'm sure that if you dream again, you have more interesting times ahead. Oh, Daryl, look at the time. 7:01, and we promised the Armstrongs we'd pick them up at 7:15. Daryl, what is it? Your face.
Do you hear it?
Hear what?
You do hear it, don't you? The voices.
Voices. Daryl, what are you talking about? Why, the people in this restaurant are most well-behaved.
Gone. Just the way it was before.
Oh, Daryl, please. If it's a joke, please tell it to me. Daryl, what is it? What are you staring at? What's behind my chair? What's there? Daryl, tell me what. Daryl, it's the table. Why did you throw over the table? Daryl, what is it? What is it? Why did you scream? Why?
The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
And now back to the thoughts of Daryl Hall, accused murderer, as he sits in the courtroom awaiting the return of a jury, which is to decide whether he is to live or die.
Yes, she wanted to know why I had done it. Screamed, thrown over the table, they all wanted to know. But how could I tell them? Tell them of her, standing behind Mary's chair, that thing of degradation, and those lips saying, kill. I went home. Mary thought I was overworked.
It's your nerves, darling. You've been working so hard. Go home and rest, darling. That's all you need.
Rest, rest. What good was rest? I had to reason things out. All my life I'd lived with reason, and now this horror. Hallucination. Yes, that was it. I had been working hard. They paid so little at the university and expected so much. And so I rested through the next day. It was quite dark when I awoke. The phone rang. It was Mary calling to find out how I felt.
Are you sure you're all right, Daryl?
Oh, yes, Mary. Yes, I'm fine, thank you.
You sound all right.
Your advice was good, dear. Rest apparently was just what I needed.
Then go along back to bed. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, dearest, and thanks for calling.
Goodbye, Daryl. Sleep well tonight.
I hung up the receiver. And then the clock on the mantel behind me began striking.
Always at 7.
Yes, that was true. Both times at 7 o'clock was when that horror had happened, and then, with the last chime of the clock, I realized it was 7 again. 7. Would I see her again? I stood there, back against the wall, waiting. So quiet. I could hear the clock ticking away the seconds. Would it happen again, this hallucination of mine? I waited. I heard no pitiful murmur of voices. Just quiet. The tick, tick, tick of the clock. So dark in the room, I could see the shadowy emptiness of a chair near the other wall. And then the chair was no longer empty. There was someone in it, and I said, who's there? There was no answer, and I said, answer me, who's there? No answer. A strange darkness in the room. Deeper and deeper, I could see nothing, and then two swirling pools of flame-red light closer and closer. I stood there, I couldn't move.
A rumbling began in my head. Fear, I tell you, fear tearing at my brain. Louder and louder, while those red circles of light came closer and closer. What was it? What was it? What? And then I knew. It was her eyes. Her eyes burning close into mine, into the brain of me, pounding one thought into me.
Kill. Kill. Kill.
Why did she say that? Why? Kill whom? Why should I kill? Why should I kill? If I had known then. The jury coming back. The verdict, what? No, not yet. Still out. They've got to find me guilty. I've got to hang if I live. But I mustn't think of that. I must think of what happened. What happened? Well, where was I? Yes, that woman, her eyes pounding that word into me, and then gone again. But this time, as real as the breath in me, I knew it. I knew it. And with that realization, a coldness as of a wind blew around me and clutched at my heart. For if she was reality, somehow I knew I was lost. And so it began. Night after night at the stroke of seven, first that wailing dirge of those lost souls, and then her writhing lips.
Kill, 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 kill,
kill, kill, kill, kill, kill, kill. Those words began pounding in my head so that even when she wasn't there, I heard them. I hid in my rooms. I didn't go out. People would see this madness that had come over me. I went nowhere. And soon I knew they were talking of me, my friends.
I tell you, I don't know what's come over Daryl. Hides in his rooms, won't even talk to me. Something is wrong.
And Mary.
Please, Daryl, you've got to let me see you. This talking over the phone. Oh, Daryl, what's wrong? What's wrong?
And night after night, the horror of... And the greater horror of...
Kill, 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 kill.
Mary pleaded with me.
Daryl, if you love me, please let me see you, talk to you. Come over to my house tonight, please, Daryl. Perhaps I can help you. Please, darling. Please.
I didn't want to go, but I went. That night, perhaps she could help. Yes, help me understand the madness of those wailing voices and drifting white faces. Understand the horror of that woman and that maddening word. Mary, so understanding, so gentle, she could help me. Clear my head of the madness.
Oh, Daryl, you're here at last.
Mary, help me. You will help me.
Oh, Daryl, you're fit.
Mary, I...
Don't talk yet. Sit here.
I'm sane, Mary. Believe me, I'm sane.
Of course, dearest. Of course you are.
It's that madness outside of me, those white drifting faces moaning
rest,
at me.
Darling.
And that woman out of hell.
Mm-hmm.
Her eyes and her lips telling me to... The time? What time is it?
Why, 7:00. Daryl, what is it?
I didn't know. I lost track. I've got to get out of here.
Daryl, wait. Don't go, don't.
Too late.
Daryl, what is it?
You hear them, don't you, Mary?
I'll call a doctor.
Listen to them. Their voices are so loud tonight. Listen, Mary, listen,
oh,
listen.
Daryl, don't.
You hear
There's
them.
No
you
one
must
here.
Hear them. What are they saying? Louder and louder, trying to tell me something. What are you saying out there? What are you telling me?
Daryl, stop.
They're gone. Faces, voices gone. Now she'll be here.
Oh, Daryl, please. You're frightening me.
Kill.
You hear her, Mary? You hear her?
Kill.
No.
Kill.
No, no.
Louder,
Daryl,
louder.
Please.
I can't see her, but I hear, where
kill.
Is she? Thing out of hell.
Kill.
Go back, I tell you, back.
Kill.
Louder and louder. Make her stop,
kill.
Mary. Make her stop pounding
kill.
In my head. Stop
kill.
It. Stop it. She never knew what do you want of me. Stop
kill.
It. Stop.
Kill.
Stop it. I can't stand
kill.
Anymore. Yes, kill. Go away and I'll kill. I'll kill. I'll kill.
Don't. I know. You're joking me. Daryl. No.
Kill. Kill. Mary. Mary. Yes, I had killed her. My sweet, gentle little Mary killed her with my own hands. I opened my hands. She fell to the floor. I went out into the street. People all around me hurrying. I was in no hurry. What that woman had wanted, I had done. I had killed.
I walked all night, it didn't matter where, and in the morning I found myself on the campus of the school before the very building in which a class was waiting for my lecture. I went in. I walked up on the platform and looked down into their faces, and I said to them, "Ladies and gentlemen, my lecture for today will be on the subject of the indeterminate factor in the evolutionary..."
I stopped to murmur in the air those voices again, but it was broad daylight. I had never heard those voices in daylight before. What did they want of me? What were they saying? There was a strangeness in their pitiful voices, yes, like a dirge of tears and sorrow for someone, for me. Yes, for me. And then her voice, laughing, laughing, triumphant, and then I understood. For the first time, I understood everything. She had triumphed over me. That was why those lost souls were wailing a dirge over me. I was hers, hers forever. I turned and ran out of there like a madman, ran, and as I ran, those voices of the damned were talking to me.
"You are doomed as we are doomed.
As all who murder are doomed.
To her and murdered.
Now you are one of us. No peace for those who murder. No rest through all eternity.
No rest for those who murder.
Through all eternity."
I covered my ears with my hands as I ran. No use. I heard them. I heard them.
"Only one hope for you, man. One hope.
Expiate your crime.
On the gallows.
Pay for what you have done.
Die on the gallows and you shall have rest. One hope, man. One hope."
So that was it. If I paid society for my crime, she would fail. I would be free of her, that thing, that essence of evil, that siren who called men to murder her so that souls, their souls, would be slaves to her for all eternity. Yes, yes, I would pay for my crime. I ran on back to Mary's house. Yes, I would pay, and gladly with my life to have peace and the rest of oblivion. I went back into the house. Yes, Mary was still there, cold.
I lifted her. Those same hands that had crushed the life out of her lifted her and carried her out into the sun. My eyes were so filled with tears that I could hardly see where I walked. People began milling around me.
"Hey, look at that guy. He's got a woman in his arms.
Where's he carrying her?"
"Hey, he must have fainted."
"No, look. She's dead."
"Hey, who killed her?
Hey,
who killed her, mister? Who killed her?"
"I did. I killed her with my own hands. I killed her, and please, I want to die for that."
And then the trial. My friends, they wanted to save me. Clever attorneys and sanity commissions and twists of the laws, but I wanted to die, I tell you. I had to die. If they set me free, if I lived and died as most men die, whose death they call a natural one, then she would have me. No, no, I want to hang by the neck until dead. I want that noose around my neck, the trap beneath my feet. The jailer pulls a switch. My feet dancing in air, the noose murdering me the way my hands committed murder. Oblivion. And I'd be free, free of that horror with the writhing lips and the bloodstained teeth. The jury, they're coming in guilty. They've got to find me guilty. Guilty, find me guilty.
"We, the jury, find the defendant guilty of murder in the first degree."
"Guilty! You hear that? You thing of the devil, guilty! And they'll hang me by the neck until dead, and I'll be free of you. I'll have my peace. You failed, you fiend, you. I'll pay for my crime. You'll never get me. You'll never get..."
Hey, he's fainted.
Yeah, the defendant's fainted. Get a doctor, someone. Ambulance, call an ambulance.
It's no use. This man is dead. Heart attack.
Holy. Would you take a look at his face? As if he was looking at the devil himself.
Now, Mr. Obler, you mean there's a power of evil loose in the world?
That's an interesting question, Frank, because a statement of that very sort was the reason I wrote tonight's story. Someone said to me, "How is it possible for so much evil to be done in the world unless there's a power for evil?" I believe that the evil that men do may be caused by outside influences, the will to power, the wrongful examples of others. But as to the evil being a living monster, well, supposing we call tonight's story a parable of a man who really wanted to kill and saw the evil intent within himself personalized so vividly that he thought it actually existed outside of himself.
Well, that explanation satisfies me.
It is later than you think.
From the early 1940s, it's been Arch Obler's Lights Out. Well, it's time for us to turn the lights out as well, at least on this edition of Yesteryear, but that's okay. We'll make it a point to join you again next week at this very same time for more of the best of the golden age of radio, right here on Yesteryear. Till next time, I'm Craig Roberts. So long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination.